We're back after listening to music by Alex Koch there, Reduce, Reuse, Recycle.
And
the R's in order?
And the
R's are in order. Reduce, Reuse, Recycle.
Where does this group, these phenomenal musicians come from?
Well, they're French. They're based around Paris, right outside of Paris. And Thierry Picou, who's one of my all-time favorite composers, he's about 42 years old, I believe. He came over to... Yeah, right. He came over to Brown actually the year after I graduated, but I was living in the area, and I got to meet him and have a lesson with him, and he liked my work, so he asked me to arrange this piece, which was for a couple saxophones and piano for his group, which is cello, clarinets, and piano. The Ensemble Zelig, they call themselves. But they're great. They do a lot of shows in France. I think they're doing really well. They... I'm writing a piece for the cellist right now, a piece for cello and dancer and pre-recorded sound. They're wonderful, yeah.
Your work is really diverse in terms of the materials that you use and the output, shall we say, that you created in. You talked about the 8-track piece and, of course, acoustic pieces, electroacoustic pieces, including the one we're about to hear. This is the, and I have to pull up a sheet to read this, sonata. Here we go.
Right.
Sonata number 2008_05-3006-0008-001-00 in E minor reggae. Well, tack you wrote here on this one.
So
tack as in tachometer. Okay. So we're going to hear that in a bit, but give us, it sounds like a sort of a combination of a dance track and somewhat improvised maybe at some software. So tell us a little bit about how you made this, what software you used to make it, and the sources that, the sound sources that you used to put this together.
Sure. Well, this piece is technically a remix or a derivative work. It depends how you want to phrase it. But it was part of a remix project that's ongoing. It's at remixin.com. That's remixin.com.
Right. And, that's part of John Arroyo's project, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll be working up a piece for that for the next round.
Oh, great. Yeah, I think it's a wonderful project. I caught wind of a few months ago, and I did one remix before that, and this was another one. I think it was called a fourth round remix. So there's a pretty extensive remix tree that comes before it. In fact, let me just pull that up. 1 second here.
Technology everywhere, on your side, on our side.
What, isn't he in the studio with us?
Of course.
He is in the house. He's right here in the house, but, you know, he's on the other side of the wall.
Ah, that wall.
That wall.
In the house. Well, you know, the distances are getting shorter and shorter, the better the internet gets. But yes, the remix tree, it began with a movement of En La Selva by John Arroyo, and then Courtney Brown, who also, I believe, is at Dartmouth.
Yes, she is.
With John, did Tango En La Selva, a remix of that. And then she did her own remix the next round, Tango 2. And then someone named Montres did Tango Vega, a really nice mix that I liked a lot, with a lot of pulse, of course. And then I finally did my sonata. you know, a lot of the sound sources are, of course, from these remixes that came before it. And I really just, for this one, I believe I just used Audacity for clipping and Logic for the mixing and some of the software instruments. So I do like to use a lot of the software instruments. Sometimes it's a combination of my own percussion samples mixed in with the MIDI. But there's definitely a lot of dance techno elements in this mix and reggaeton elements as well. That's why I called it reggae tech. I kind of wanted to parody the sonata, the classical sonata, and that's why I used the Beethovenian format with the number and the name in quotation marks, reggae tech.
Right.
So I did include a bit of piano and towards the end, which to me was another reference to the sonata, the classical sonata. But the main motivation for this was just to do interesting sampling of the previous remixes to stretch and repeat and manipulate what had already been done, and to include a lot of interesting beats for people to whatever bang their heads to, dance to, or just sit and enjoy.
And one question that I had still hanging is, did you work this out in detail, or did you improvise a lot of this?
Yeah, this is. I think you're right. This is an example of more improvisational composition. Certainly, with the form, it's pretty. This is pretty through composed. It has a lot of different sections that some of them lead into each other, some don't. But yeah, a lot of it is sort of improvising on some of the samples in my head, but also improvising on some of the bass lines and definitely some of the piano stuff towards the end.
Let's hear it. This is a sonata with a lot of interposed numbers, Reggae Tech, by our guest Alex Koch. We'll be right back. Alex Koch, Reggae Tech Sonata, with lots of interposed numbers. Electroacoustic piece done for the remix and project. Round three, you said?
I believe that was technically round four.
Round four.
It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, okay. And started by Courtney Brown and John Arroyo at Dartmouth. Some folks that I've worked with, actually, but not musically, from an entirely different point of view. So it's kind of interesting to meet them this way. And, of course, as I said, I'll be working on a piece for the next round of remixes.
That's not Appleton's group.
No, actually not. But we'll talk about that off mic at some point. Yeah, so before we play anything else, let's find out something about where you're going with your work. Because you're a young composer, you've shown a great amount of diversity in the work that you've done so far. And we see that as we've spoken to composers over the past, 13 years now, that they will go through kinds of transformations and then settle for a while. Do you see that happening?
Well, yeah, I guess if I'm going to be settling at all, it would just be settling in sort of dance and house music for a bit. And when I say that, it's a very broad term. I mean, it really just means any music for any instruments or electronic media with pulse or with beats that one might be able to dance to. I mean, for a while I was sort of searching and I was doing this, this indeterminate piece right alongside a very minimalist piece. And I think now all the pieces I'm working on currently and what I've just recently done include some sort of pulse, whether it's electronic or it's a drum set itself. But I don't know if I'll ever truly settle down in one phase or another. I mean, I always like to do new stuff. I like to at least attempt to be on the cutting edge of new music. And I'm always trying to incorporate new software or new instruments or new motives into what I do.
I don't think the question was quite settling down so much as just sort of settling on one for a little while and sort of focusing in that area and see if you could move down into the detail of the style rather than jump from one to the next. And not that the jumping so far hasn't apparently been very successful based on the pieces we've listened to.
But. And was there something at Duke that drew you there?
I don't think so. I've only been at Duke for 1 year so far. So I think a lot of it is what I'm listening to outside of academics, you know, what I'm sort of pursuing on my own and the concerts I'm going to and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I definitely think it's a good idea to settle down and at least within sort of one mini subgenre and try to get better at it, because you're very right about that. I guess in reading about Dennis's We Are All Mozart project, I mean, it seemed like because you had so many pieces to work on one after the other, you're able to maybe take one idea or a few ideas and really delve deep into them in a number of different pieces. And I'm looking forward to doing that too. I'm actually finding that exact thing happening to me, in that I have a number of pieces I have to work on right now, some pretty pressing commissions, and I'm actually doing similar things in all of them. But I think that's okay when you get to a point where you can really, one tiny variation can eventually lead to a lot of difference.
However, if you saw what that project turned Calvos into, you might not embrace it so much.
That's pretty ambitious.
Yeah, it's sad to see what he's turned into.
He lost weight. He lost weight. He got very gray.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I might stick to 3 or 4 pieces a year, not 100.
That'll do.
Talk to us about academics. You're on your PhD. What the heck good does a PhD do you?
Well,
tenure.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good question. I'm not sure a lot of people know that. Know the answer, really. What it does for me is allows me to compose and be a musician and improve as a musician for 5 years with a modest stipend, a way to survive. I get to meet other people doing similar stuff. I get to study with some really incredible composers. So, I mean, it's kind of a utopia. At the same time, I feel a little burdened by some of the requirements, perhaps some archaic requirements in terms of coming out of the school with a PhD in classical music. I wish I could change a few things. But it's certainly...
Such as? Don't stop there. Let's hear more.
Too much sonata allegro form.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's certain things I have to learn how to do. Certain things on the piano that will certainly benefit me as a musician, but I don't feel are quite relevant anymore. There's a lot of musicology requirements that, again, I think are certainly enriching, but should not be required. I find a lot more artistic motivation actually out of critical theory, gender studies, new media studies, things like that, instead of sort of staying confined within the department of music. So, but you know, it's good to have something to react against. I feel like there's a lot of room in classical music and academia in general, in music departments. There's a lot of room to improve, to expand, the thinking and the music itself, the art that's coming out of it. So that's a good thing.
And the basketball team could certainly use a new fight song.
Right. Pulse minimalist fight. Yes. Well, you could try out for the Hockey Night in Canada has been looking for a theme.
Oh well, that and ringtones. I mean, they're my two main goals as a musician. So,
you have in your biography something, and I don't know what you're talking about. What's art intervention?
Art intervention. Well, I mean, it's a little tongue in cheek, but I am interested in the idea of really disturbing the status quo. Coming
with art or the status quo of art.
I think disturbing the status quo of art by any means necessary. I'm not about to, go into a classical concert and streak across the stage, but I do.
Is that
at
because
least...
you don't look good enough to do that, or
yeah, that's it. No, I mean, I don't know. I have some respect, I guess, for the past. I mean, we can't forget it and we learn from it. But at the same time, I do think that, at least within classical music, we've been a little too stuck in the past. And we need to reinvent the genre. I don't believe in the whole classical music is dying thing and all that. But I do think that you know, it's up to us to really change it and to open people's minds up to outside influence, to different concert venues, to thinking across disciplines and all that. I think a lot more of that has to happen, and I think it will. I think we're going in a good direction.
The whole attitude of sort of performance art of the 70s and 80s sort of made that attempt, and then it collapsed in on itself with kind of conservatism. What's your reaction to sort of that period of time and what's happened today, with the exception of you, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's classical music, and again, that term, as you all, I'm sure, know, you know, is probably not a great word for it, but it's the best we've got, at least.
Well, we call it non-pop. We think that's a heck of a lot better.
Yeah, and non-pop, right? Non-pop is an interesting term. Again, it's a tough thing to analyze, but I think that we can have all kinds of attempts to reinvent classical music or non-pop music. But I think, honestly, society will probably dictate how that will succeed or not. And I think today, with this huge rapid trajectory of information technology, and every year, and if you believe in Ray Kurzweil's analysis, we have an exponential growth in information technology. Things change so rapidly that we don't know what could happen in 2 years.
Well, of course, Kurzweil projects that we won't need any kind of sort of physical input in a decade or two, and that we'll be all sort of mentally networked. So it's not just minor changes in a few years if you accept Kurzweil's point of view on it. Sure.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's got some very interesting ideas. I mean, according to him, in 2029, you know, artificial intelligence will exceed that of human intelligence. And I don't know. I kind of believe
his case is convincing. I mean, he does you know, point to the past and sort of ramps it up on a kind of a curve and says, you know, unless something devastating happens, we're going to be there by, as you say, 2029.
Sure. And I do agree. I mean, at least I theoretically agree with that, but I guess what I'm saying with the rate of change is that, because, you know, we're in the knee of the curve, as he says, or at least we're in a time when everything is changing so rapidly, I think musical change, artistic change, can happen a little more easily than it may have been able to in the 70s or 80s.
Before we get to Chopper Remix, what kind of dramatic changes have you seen in your own lifetime that can be considered dramatic, or hasn't they happened yet?
Well, I mean, I just, maybe it's because I'm just on the computer online a lot more, but I just see how rapidly website interfaces change, how rapidly trends change, products get into hands of people so quickly.
Well, that's sort of general, but in terms of sort of the art form that we do, where is that change? Can you point to a few examples of something that's totally dramatic and unexpected within the art form?
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, analog to digital change is happening pretty quickly. I think that in terms of performance venue, that's changing pretty quick. I'm seeing a lot of new sort of chamber music performances in club spaces. Gabriel Prokofiev is doing some really interesting remixes of his own work, live remixing, also employing other DJs to do that. So he'll have a chamber piece in a club, and then he'll do a bunch of remixes of the piece itself, and then another chamber piece and some more remixes. So I mean, this type of thing, moving the art form into different venues where it may not necessarily have been in the past, reaching different audiences, I think that's happening pretty quickly, and I think it's going to continue to happen.
Have these changes affected the way you write music?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, because my ideal venue is more of a club setting, a more relaxed setting than a concert hall or a, you know, more traditional performance space. So I do write music that I want to be performed in this ideal space, because hopefully it will happen, and then it'll be ready for that space.
Let's listen to Chopper remix and give us a little introduction to that.
Okay. This was the first remix I did for the Remixing Project that we talked about earlier. There's a long kind of history behind it, I guess. I was studying Elliot Carter, and I was reading David Schiff's music of Elliot Carter, and I read about some of his pieces that use cross-cutting, which is how he terms it. Basically having simultaneous developments that are cut into each other, almost like DJing or splicing or what have you. So I started doing that with two of my own short pieces I'd done, and it was very neat, but... I felt a little limited, so I decided to just create this Maximus P patch that can chop 8 different samples into each other at various rates. And I used that for a lot of the material.
For our listeners, would you explain what you mean by a MSP patch and how it worked in this particular piece?
Sure. Well, just using the software MaxMSP, which is a pretty graphic interface with relatively complicated programming, but certainly nothing like Super Collider, I would say. I was able to just get 8 different samples going and fade in and out between them at different rates. So, I mean, I can set it to fade in between different samples at 1 millisecond, or I can set it at 3 seconds. But the idea is that they're all simultaneously occurring, essentially, because of the nature of the chopping. So even though they start and stop, it's random little bits from each of the 8 samples, and they're strung together and crossfading so quickly that it actually sounds polyphonous, whereas it's really homophonic, which is, it's kind of an interesting effect. So my idea of fragmentation, this really hyper fragmentation, I think, to me, it sort of speaks to the way the digital world is today. I guess the form of the piece is pretty traditional. It's kind of ABA, and in the middle, I do some grooves, and it sort of more openly uses some of the samples from the previous remixes. And I actually play some alto sax over at some improvised alto sax.
Let's hear it. Our guest is Alex Koch, and this is Chopper Remix. Thank you. Chopper remix by our... Why not hearing myself all of a sudden?
I'm hearing you.
You're hearing me. Okay, there we are. Ah, there we are. Chopper remix by our guest today on Calvus and Damien.
In the house.
Alex Koch. Saxophones. You still play those winds?
Yeah, I still do. I wish I practiced a little more, but yeah, I do play, and I hope to continue to play quite a bit.
Is there opportunity for, say, an ensemble playing Koch music at Duke?
Yeah, there is. I've been part of the Duke New Music Ensemble, which was actually founded early last year by George Lamb, who's now a fourth-year student in the department. And we're still playing. We're doing a concert of Jennifer Fitzgerald's music at the end of September. She is a graduate of Duke, and she passed away actually about a year or two ago. And so, we're still playing a lot. I do saxophones, clarinets, and we've done a few of my pieces with the group, as well as other composers' pieces and more established composers' work.
Is there a Duke direction? Is there any kind of a Duke philosophy that you're buying into?
Well, I don't think so, and that's actually one of the reasons I came to Duke. There's a lot of diversity in the department as far as musical style. I mean, there certainly have been, and there are composers like me who tend to work with pulse quite a bit. But there's plenty of other styles going around, and the professors are quite open to all kinds of styles, which is very nice.
I think we should go back to some acoustic music. How about At Bay? Give us an introduction to At Bay.
Well, that's it's a piano trio I wrote a little over 2 years ago, one summer, while out in Pebble Beach area, California, at California Summer Music. It was a nice little festival, and this was written not long after Context and another piece that you won't hear today, but called Fragments. That was a little less tonal. So this was me just getting out of sort of the my than typical sort of compositional mindset, which is a little more rigorous. And this is just me kind of sitting back and composing and listening and composing intuitively and really enjoying composing. I wrote it very fast. But it also has the influence of composer Alejandro Vignau, who was at the Norfolk Chamber Music Festival earlier that summer. And he does a lot with what he calls multiple simultaneous times. So he just takes a number of different lines and he basically composes them at different rates within the same sort of ultimate rhythmic grid. So I tried to do that with some of in all three movements with different parts of the movements, the cello, the violin, and piano playing at different rates.
In the notes that I'd made for this piece, that I kind of noticed that it seemed like the development was done through these rhythmic overlays and tempo and dynamics rather than the development of what you might think of as the harmonic or melodic material. It sounded very sort of like simultaneous modularity.
Yeah, that's certainly correct. I did try to, you know, as the lines would diverge temporally, at least their rates would diverge. I also sometimes would take the harmony and that would diverge as well from the sort of beginning mode. But yes, I mean, there isn't traditional development. I think it is sort of a co-development of harmony and time, as this process sort of carries out.
Is this through composed in the sense that every note is written out? It had a very improvisational feel, modular kind of play this a few times feel right from the start.
I mean, yes, every note is written out. But actually, this piece had much more of a structure, a predetermined structure than a lot of my other pieces, probably by nature of some of the processes that I was using, the temporal, the rhythmic processes. So again, I mean, I always like to compose by playing on the piano, improvising a bit, but this actually has a pretty rigid structure.
Let's hear it. This is At Bay by Alex Koch.
Thank you.
At Bay by yes.
Does the title refer to the bay in around Pebble Beach?
That's a good question. No, it doesn't actually.
Those bays.
Right.
Or eBay. This is prior to eBay.
Oh no. Well, no, eBay's been around.
Has it?
Yeah.
Out in Pebble Beach?
Pebble Bay.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you said?
Was it?
Circuitous and tautological.
Is that the answer? Well,
not quite.
Alex here. Oh, he's still here. Yes. Oh, yes.
Well, any of those could be. Hey, it's all about what the listener thinks, right? Well, no, I mean, I guess it just has to do with sort of the way I was feeling at the time. Hey, you know, it maybe eBay as well. Maybe I didn't know it.
We're going to wrap up with the last piece we have called Concert House. But before that, you kind of I've seen you be a crotchety personality online. What bugs you about musicians and music and composers and attitudes?
Well, yeah, I guess I do. Maybe one of the reasons I did that graffiti installation was because I like the anonymity of bathroom graffiti. Online blogging allows you to be slightly less anonymous, but still. When blogging, it's easy to you know, be pretty forthright in one's statements. But yeah, I think some of the things I've already spoken about, the concert venue, some of the more traditional aspects of classical music, yeah, they have bugged me a bit. And I do
You sound so reasonable and logical in speaking to you, but you sound so sort of, you know, passionate and furious sometimes. I mean, something kind of like triggers you. What is that? What would you like walk out on or maybe streak across the stage?
Well, I guess, I mean, if it's anything that really has to do with sort of strict status quo and strict tradition, I think there's so much room for change. There's so much information out there today to be influenced by, to react against, that I think when a genre of art in general or really anything is quite limited by, you know, just the past and by the sort of rigorous academic programs and by the training, you know, for instance, the sort of piano pedagogy of America today, which still teaches, you know, romantic piano, and people often, I think, lose sort of a strict rhythmic pulse who stick with that for a lot of their early years. These types of things, I think, really need to be changed. And I like to read Richard Taruskin. I think he's a really great voice for
another
this.
Cranky guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you can top him as far as being cranky, but, you know, I was just reading a book review actually by him, which sort of more turned into a diatribe, I think, as is his custom, which appeared in the New Republic back in October of 2007. So,
yeah, I think that's the one that a lot of folks react to. What was he review? He was review couple books, right?
Yeah, it was three books. I guess sort of defending the classical music, really. And I guess he just says, he basically makes a sort of 10-page argument that the people who are actually defending it are the ones who are bringing it down, and we need to be more open-minded as far as, you know, musical genre and sort of hierarchies. So while he does maybe seem like a real crotchety old man out there in Berkeley, I think he's really open-minded, and I mean, he's an incredible writer.
Let's hear Concert House. Give us an introduction to that.
Well, yeah, this piece, it is for five acoustic instruments and one electronic instrument, but I wrote it for Eighth Blackbird. They came to Duke last year and did a public reading session. They certainly had done some rehearsal beforehand. It was very well performed. But the percussionist plays a Roland SPDS sample pad, which was loaded with a number of different patches of samples that I had gotten from beforehand, and the other instruments are flute, clarinet, violin, cello, and piano. And this piece explores, you know, just two of my real loves in life, and those are electronic dance music, techno music, house music, and instrumental chamber music. And I just wanted to bring them together in a pretty coherent way over about 8 minutes. It does include some improvisation as well as written out music, and of course, lots of pulse.
Yes, lots of pulse. Alex Koch, thanks so much for joining us today on Calvos and Damien in the
Thank
House.
Thank you. And, well, thanks so much yourselves. I really appreciate it.
Here we go. Alex Koch Concert House. Thank you.